Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And today we have help from some of our patrons at TrentHornPodcast.com. I said to them, what are some random things you want me to talk about on Free For All Friday? And they obliged me with some answers that I want to share with you today. So welcome. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And Monday through Thursday, we talk apologetics, theology, how to explain and defend the Catholic faith. Friday, we talk about whatever I feel like talking about. But today, we're going to talk about what my patrons at TrentHornPodcast.com enjoy talking about or want to hear my thoughts on. And if you would like to take part in future episodes, submit questions, comment on episodes, get access to our Catechism study series that goes through the whole Catechism, get access to our New Testament study series that goes through the entire New Testament. These are video study series. I think you'll really enjoy them if you haven't checked them out yet. You can have all that and more at TrentHornPodcast.com. If you become a premium subscriber, you get access to that, and you keep the podcast going, which I am always very grateful for. So a lot of questions were submitted. A lot of them still focused on theology, which, of course, is our bread and butter here at the Council of Trent podcast. And I may include some of those in more of a theological episode during the week. But today I have picked out five questions that are not really related to theology, but it's Free For All Friday, so we can talk about them. And that makes it, oh, so much fun. All right, number one, how do you pick baby names? All right, so this is an interesting one because there's a lot of variables that go into choosing baby names, and people have different traditions and practices when it comes to it. Some people pick a baby name pretty early on, like they're pretty set. Some people have a list of names. They've had them since they were little kids, or they've had them, they and their spouse came up with names even before they became pregnant. And this is the name. If we have a baby, if we're blessed with a baby, this shall be their name. And it's carved in stone and hung on a mantle. And this shall be the child's name, for the prophecy has foretold it. You know, it's pretty planned out and determined. Other people, they kind of let the spirit move them, right? When it comes to choosing a baby name, they wait until the baby gets there. I find this is especially the case with people who don't choose to find out the sex of the baby, whether the baby is a boy or a girl, until the baby is born. I find that a lot of people who don't choose to find out that information, when do you find out if it's a boy or a girl during pregnancy? I mean, I've had three children. I should know this, but I want to say it's somewhere. We usually do the ultrasound method to figure that out. I think you can do a blood test, but we do the ultrasound, and I think that's like halfway through the pregnancy, 18, 20 weeks. You can usually figure that out. And we like finding out early. We just want to know. We want to know so we can prepare. We can mentally prepare. But what's interesting is that sometimes we'll just change our minds. I think the spirit kind of moves us that right up near until they're born, we have sometimes had one name in mind. And then we just looked at the ultrasound more intently and we said, no, this is their name. And in some of these instances, we originally selected a name that was not apostolic. We'd actually thought of names like Joseph or David. But now we've kind of picked apostolic names or names of the apostles for all of our children. And I think that is something that might be something we'll continue on. We have all boys, so it's easy to pick all of that. But that, you know, different people have different ways of choosing it. But I really do believe that if you choose a name for your child, you should really keep the child's best interests at heart. I would highly caution against choosing unusual names that are difficult to spell. Because remember, they're the one who's going to have their name for the rest of their life. Now, I'm not saying your great aunt so-and-so that had an impossible name is not an important person. I don't want to denigrate what other people do in their families. You know, that's your family tradition. But I do think it's worth thinking about, okay, what will happen with my child as they have this name? Because it's hard. It's difficult to spend your entire life saying, it's spelled this way, or correcting people who would normally spell it some other way. So I think there really is something, especially for those of us who are Catholic, to choose traditional names, saint names. You can't go wrong there. Now, of course, some saints in some cultures, their names may be difficult to spell in modern day America, for example. That can happen. But I would just say if you're choosing a name, consider first and foremost how it's going to affect your child for the rest of his or her life. And so I'm happy with the names we've chosen for our children. I'm sure they're happy with them, but we'll see. Oh, here's a little bit of a controversy. What do you do if a child kind of rejects their name? For example, my full name is Trenton. Trenton Horn is actually my full legal name. But starting in middle school, sophomore year of high school, I started to go by Trent. And I just asked people to call me Trent. And I just went by Trent starting when I was about 15, 16. And that's how I have asked people to, and that's the name that's on my books. It's the name that I introduce myself to others. I prefer the name Trent. So what's funny is I have family members who still call me Trenton, and they refuse to call me Trent because Trenton is the name that I had ever since I was a little kid. But it's not the name I prefer. I prefer the shorter variant of the name, Trent. I know people who we always called them Billy growing up, and now they're Bill. They're Bill. They're not Billy. Jimmy Akin, he was named Jimmy. My colleague Jimmy Akin at Catholic Answers, he was Jimmy. Then when he got into apologetics and his career was taking off, he wanted to be taken seriously, quote unquote. So he called himself James Akin. And then later on in his life, when he kind of relaxed about it, he went back to Jimmy. And so he's talked about that a little bit on the podcast and in other venues. But that does happen to people. All right, four more questions. Number two, Trent, what are your thoughts on investing? I think it's, in general, a good thing. I know there are some people on the internet, some Catholics, who don't believe people should invest. They think that it's immoral or unethical. I would say, in general, it is not. And the reasons they give, I'm not really compelled by. They'll say, well, if you invest money in a mutual fund, you could be supporting businesses that you don't even know they're doing bad things, what they're doing, because you're not involved. But that's true if I shop at Costco or Target, or I shop at any major retailer, or if I put my money in any bank or even a credit union. Down the line, my money is going to be involved in some kind of unethical venture. If I shop at a store, they might donate some of the money I use to Planned Parenthood or LGBT causes. That's remote material cooperation with evil. That can be justified if you have a proportionate reason. And my proportional reason is that I would die if I tried to live on an Alaskan homestead and created all my supplies and never interacted with any other people in the world. I couldn't do that. We have to interact with others so these kinds of things will happen. I'm saying in general, I mean, if there is an evil company like Playboy magazine or Planned Parenthood or whatever, you should not buy stock directly with a company whose primary purpose is to do evil. So there's a difference, right? I don't think, let me give you an example. It's not wrong to go into a CVS or Walgreens to buy gum, even though Walgreens and CVS, they sell contraception, for example, and that's evil. Target might have a pornographic book, 50 Shades of Grey. But in general, most of what they do is moral or amoral, or it's fine. That's a small part of what they do. So you go in and buy gum. I would say it's wrong to go into an adult bookstore, aka a pornographer shop, a pornography store. I don't even know what you would call them, right? A porn house, a porn shop. It would be wrong to go in there, even if you just like, I really need a stick of bubble gum. You pull in and, you know, I'm sure they, I mean, I don't know. I imagine they have pornography and they might have impulse items at the register, right? Everybody has impulse items. So if you go into a porn shop and they sell novelty bubble gum and I just want some bubble gum, no, it would be wrong to patronize a pornography store, just even if you got something that was not porn, like gum at the register or something. But at Walgreens or CVS, it's different. If they do immoral things, it's a very small percentage. It's counterbalanced by the proportional good of providing people with medicine and hygiene products and food and basic necessities and things that we need. So I would say that general investing in like an index fund in general is moral. And I would say that you may have a duty to do that, actually. Why? Well, in order to love our neighbor, we have to love ourselves, right? So to love our neighbor, like, for example, if you just gave away all of your money to the poor, what would happen? you would become poor, and then other people would now have to take care of you. So that's not very prudent. We should give away enough of our money so that we can retain some to continue to live, to function, and to keep giving to the poor and to good causes in the future. So love your neighbor as yourself. If you don't take care of yourself, you can't take care of your neighbor. And so what do you do then when you're older in life and you choose not to work or you're unable to work? How will you support yourself? Well, we have an ability to do that by saving for retirement, by using compound interest and saving a portion of income every month. You do it over 30, 40 years, you can provide for yourself. And then in your advanced age, you are now capable of helping other people, devoting yourself more to being a grandparent, to altruism, philanthropy, to all sorts of things, because you have now are now capable of providing for yourself. And you can help other people. Now, I know the critics of investing will sometimes say, ah, you can provide for yourself. We got to rethink this. You know, maybe you should just invest in your, you know, your children or your community will take care of you instead of a retirement account. And I agree that that's good. Like having lots of kids, that's a benefit. They will take care of you. People need more than just money in a retirement account. They need it's not sufficient, but money is necessary. So your children or community will have to spend money to take care of you. And I just don't think it's very fair to think my plan for retirement is just that my children will take care of me. I don't think that's fair to them to say you're going to take, I took care of you, you're going to take care of me. I don't think that's fair. What if your child wants to, let's say you have two kids and you have a daughter who wants to be a missionary, or let's say a nun, and a son who wants to be a priest. And so they're not going to be entering into occupations where they make a lot of money. What if they say, well, I guess I can't be a priest, or I can't be a religious sister, or I can't do this or that because I have to take care of my parents when they're older. I think that's unfair to saddle them with that. Now, obviously, children should care for their parents. Obviously. I mean, Jesus derided people in Scripture who chose to give money to the temple that they should have given to their aging parents. Certainly, that's the commandment, honor thy father and thy mother. But that doesn't mean that parents, like someone like me, should plan my life, oh, my kids will take care of me when I'm older. I certainly hope that they will. But if I have a way that is not immoral so that I can help them, I can be Grandpa Trent, Grandpapa, if you will, who helps out and is, you know, that grandfatherly figure. Being grandparents seems like it'd be kind of fun. I always hear from grandparents. They always say things like, oh man, if I knew how much fun it would be to be a grandparent, I would have been nicer to my kids. I don't know. It seems like fun. And I want, you know, to be a mutual reciprocity there of that I'm being taken care of, but I can also care and help as well. And then I'm not in dire straits. I'm not in dire straits so that I can also help other people who may need to be taken care of as well, even when I'm past the point of working. Lord willing, if I make it that far in life, you know, we'll see what happens. So that's just a short thought on that. Maybe I'll do a full episode, but I think in general, investing is a good thing. It's not immoral. And in some cases, it may be obligatory. It may be prudence demands that we invest so we can care for ourselves. So we've met the prerequisite to love our neighbor. We have loved ourselves first, not in a selfish way, but in a self-interested way. So we are prepared in life so we can help other people. Number three is a bit lighter, kind of. Why is a cheesecake not a pie? I mean, I guess cheesecake can feel pretty heavy on you, honestly. It's interesting. People say, is a cheesecake a cake or a pie? Here is my answer to the question. A cheesecake is neither. It is neither a cake, nor is it a pie. I believe it is a tart. It's a very sweet tart. It is a tart. Nonetheless, this is something I also thought about around Thanksgiving when the discussion comes up. I would say a cake is something that is light and fluffy. You know, when you're eating it, a cake is marked by the fact that it does not have a crust. It doesn't have a hardened crust. It has frosting. It has like light cake filling from batter. That is what at the very least, it does not have a crust, but it has this kind of light spongy filling and frosting on it. That'd be a cake. A pie would be something that has a filling to it. It's a bit thicker than a cake, so it's got like this filling to it. It could be cherries, could be apples, could be fruit, could be chocolate. You know, you have your dessert pie, you have your fruit pies. But here's the catch with a pie, okay? It's got to have a crust. It's got to have a top. I believe it is not a pie if it does not have a flaky top. So like apple pie. You think of apple pie, you cut it open. It's got that flaky crust. It's got the crust on the bottom, crust on the top, delicious pie in the center. To me, cake has no crust. Pie has a crust on the bottom and a flaky crust on top. And a tart would be something that has the crust, but no flaky crust on top. Usually I only have tarts when I go to galas. People invite me to fundraising galas and the hotel will put out desserts. Oftentimes it's a tart and it's a little single serve pie crust with like tart cream filling and raspberry and cherry on top. I'm not a big fan of tarts, but that's what I think of as a tart. It's not have the flaky crust on top. So by that definition, cheesecake, because it has that crust, it's got the graham cracker crust. We all want the crust of the cheesecake. That's the part we all love the most. It would be a tart because of that. It doesn't have the flaky on top. And my definition would also entail that pumpkin pie is not a pie, actually. I believe it is also a tart. It is something where you've got the crust, nothing on top, just the pumpkin filling, and it's kind of tartish. I don't think pumpkin pie is really that great. In my episode on holidays, I talked about how I've had pumpkin cheesecake, and I think that's far superior to pumpkin pie. Pumpkin pie is really only good when you lather it up with whipped cream. So I would say a cheesecake. So cake, it's got the fluffy batter, but most of all, it does not have a crust to it. A pie has a crust on the bottom and the top, but a tart just has the crust, nothing on top. So cheesecake would be a tart under this definition. Pumpkin pie should also be renamed pumpkin tart. Maybe I'm wrong. If you graduated from the Cordon Bleu culinary school or institute, what have you, send me an angry email saying I don't know my tarts from my pies, and I will issue a retraction or challenge you to a debate. All right. Number four, what is the morality of using dead actors in films? This is interesting because they had the Grand Moff Tarkin in Star Wars Rogue One. They had the deceased actor who played Grand Moff Tarkin in the original Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope. They digitally placed his face over another actor to bring him back for the episode. And they did a similar thing with they de-aged Princess Leia, but they did a similar thing there. And there are ethical issues. And you see also they got commercials with like deceased actors. It's easy to do them for 30 seconds in a commercial. I will talk about a spoiler right now. I will talk about a spoiler for a film. It's for the movie Ghostbusters Afterlife. If you don't want to hear it, skip ahead in about 30 seconds or a minute. All right, spoilers, 3, 2, 1. Ghostbusters Afterlife. At the end of the film, in the climax, they bring back Egon, who is portrayed by Harold Ramis in the original Ghostbusters films. And then when Ramis died several years ago, there was a thought you could never do a Ghostbusters 3 because what is Ghostbusters without Egon, without Harold Ramis? And so they bring back Harold Ramis in Ghostbusters Afterlife as a ghost. And at the end of the movie, they portray a ghost-like figure that's an aged Egon. And honestly, I felt like they did it in a very tasteful way. And so I would say then when it comes to the morality of using these actors, I would say that number one, you should respect their estate. You should respect the wishes of their estate, which is usually managed by their descendants, their children, their family members. And that was done actually in Ghostbusters Afterlife. So I would say that number one, you got to make sure the estate is on board. So spoilers over, by the way, Ghostbusters Afterlife. Like the movie, I thought it was really good. I'm a Ghostbusters fan, and I thought they did a good job. But you should make sure the estate is on board. And then just in general, make sure that it's respectful. Try to think, would this person have wanted to be a part of this? Do your best in that regard. But otherwise, I think that it's something that can be allowed. When you become an actor, when you become an artist, your likeness becomes a property in and of itself. You do own it, but when you die, that ownership may be transferred to other people. And so they should be consulted. If they can't be consulted or it's gone public domain even, just show respect for the original source material, I would say. So I am not just in general blanket against it. I think it could be done well. I've seen it done well. I've seen it done in poor taste. So it really does depend on the situation. Here is the last one. If you could live in any fantasy universe, which would you choose? DC, Marvel, Lord of the Rings, Star Wars. There's so many fantasy universes to choose from. it's a hard pick, right? And at first you might think, oh, I love Marvel. I love DC. It'd be cool to live in that universe. Would it be cool to live in that universe? Yeah, if you had superpowers, it would be cool. But if I was just a regular person and, you know, the Hulk runs down my street and tears the whole thing up. Like, we watch the movies when Hulk beats up Iron Man. It's like, oh, you know, they're fighting. That's cool. Let's not think about the civilian casualties that are involved, or at least the property damage. Yeah, I'm sure a lot of insurance, you're going to call them up. Sorry, we don't cover fire, flood, or Hulk. You know, we don't cover these things. I mean, even living in the Marvel universe, they'd make fun of it in the films. Like, oh yeah, next week, half of all life in the universe could just be extinguished. That's a bit stressful for me to live in a world where, like, it could be like that. So I'm going to say no. Lord of the Rings, that could be fun, but I'm not really a Shire kind of person. I'm not a homesteader. I'm not someone who lives on the land. So that delightful living in a Shire with a bunch of hairy-footed hobbits, I don't know. The same with Star Wars. It's like, yeah, if you're Luke Skywalker, it's cool to be in Star Wars. Otherwise, you're just a slave in the spice mines of Kettle, or what was it called? The spice mines of Kessel? Kettle? Han Solo makes the Kessel run in the Millennium Falcon in parsecs, which is a unit of distance, not time. I think they retconned that. Retroactive continuity was what that means. In Solo, the movie about Han Solo, that the Kessel run, a parsec, like you could shortcut it through hyperspace or something. Come on, Lucas just made, they made a mistake. Just let it be, all right? I thought about this for a bit, and I think, honestly, if I had to pick one, probably I'd pick Star Trek. Because even if you're not on the bridge in Star Trek, Jean-Luc Picard, tea, Earl Grey, hot, make it so, engage. Even if you're not on the bridge, right, being a part of the Federation does seem pretty cool. Like, there's no scarcity. You can just, like, create, materialize any kind of food that you want. Because there's no scarcity and you've reached this level of peace in human existence, you can just focus on exploration of the cosmos. That would be cool. So Star Trek, I mean, it's hard. Like, Star Trek would be fun unless you're like a Romulan or a Klingon or a Borg or a member of any of the other races except for the Federation. I don't know, but if I could be part of the Federation of Star Trek, that'd be cool. As long as I'm not a red shirt who gets killed the instant you beam down to the planet. But that's something. But I guess there's a whole lot of other fictional universes. Well, I guess the question said fantasy universe, because there's other fictional universes you could be a part of. Like, you know, do you want to be in Ferris Bueller's Day Off and sing in the it wasn't Macy's Parade, it was like the Chicago Parade, because it was in Chicago where this happened. I don't know. What movie universe would you like to live in? What fantasy or what movie universe in general would you like to live in? But I think I'd pick Star Trek out of that. Well, that was fun. That was random. That was some random questions. Thank you to our patrons at trendhornpodcast.com for sharing those with us. And if you want to take part in more patron-only exclusive offers, definitely check us out at trendhornpodcast.com. I hope this made for a delightful, random free-for-all Friday for you all. And I hope you have a very blessed weekend. So take care, everybody.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit trendhornpodcast.com.